You're listening to a podcast from 702.
For now, though, we're looking at the state of the media. This past Monday was World Press Day, and this week will involve a lot of reflection on the state of the media, particularly the state of the newsroom. And the theme this year was information as a public good. So every year, World Press Freedom Day is marked on the 3rd of May. It's to commemorate journalists, and it's to highlight the difficulties that journalists face while reporting on the news. And since reporting is largely also about looking and finding out what the truth is, means that it's no easy task. And journalists require a degree of freedom, which is usually guaranteed in some territories, but not in all. And also, sadly, we live in an era where doubt looms large when it comes to public discourse, and truth is such a contested terrain. And then you add to that the digital revolution, which has forever changed the way news is sourced, the way in which it is distributed, the way in which we consume it, in fact. And it's also disrupted just our understanding of the traditional newsroom. That has had to change. So today we're reflecting on the state of the newsroom and its ability to report the news in a way that is for public good, as is the theme for this year. And joining us for this conversation is Kate Skinner, who is a media researcher. And of course, she's worn different hats over the years in the media business. So she joins us now for those reflections. Good afternoon, Kate. Lovely to have you on the show.
Yes, good afternoon. It's lovely to be here.
Now starting to reflect a little bit on the immediate impact of the pandemic, on the survival of the newsroom. Are there indications on what the impact has been?
Yeah, it's been quite severe. So I think that a lot of the problems that we had previously have just, you know, the impact has been particularly bad on those kind of weaker, more vulnerable sectors of the media. So, for instance, if you look at the print media sector, you know, the coronavirus, the pandemic really, really had a major impact there. So, for instance, a lot of magazines closed, whole magazine, you know, publishing companies closed. If we look at, you know, some of the small community media publications, you know, the print publications in little towns, you know, the indication is, but we still need more research on this, is that 80 of 200 of these little publications closed. Mm. You know, and also I think the other thing which has been interesting and sad and really devastating for journalists themselves is, you know, the numbers of retrenchments.
Yeah.
So within the first couple of months, like 700 journalists lost their jobs, and a lot more journalists, you know, lost their jobs, you know, after that. And probably, you know, almost 600, you know, 600 odd, you know, journalists lost their jobs at the SABC, you know, and that was over and above the 700. So I think, you know, that has really been devastating, because the newsrooms were, you know, didn't have a lot of journalists, you know, there in, you know, in the first place. And freelancers have really been badly impacted. So I think, you know, all of those vulnerable, you know, groups, you know, journalists themselves have been impacted. So, you know, it's a difficult situation.
It absolutely is. So, I mean, the immediate thought, as you said, that probably about that we've had this huge number of media houses close, that immediately raises the question about the levels of unemployment or how many people have had to lose their jobs, as you've just painted the picture. And then they leave to go into public relations or even become gig workers, which means that you're hustling, you're doing anything and everything that is within your skill set, researching, editing, content creating, hustling overall. But is there adequate support when it comes to journalists as far as now being these kind of gig workers, and what are the implications when it comes to the output, when you have this constant revolving door of news practitioners, of news workers who are not in one place long enough?
Well, completely. So I think there's a big ethics issue, because what happens then, completely, as you're saying, I mean, it's this kind of revolving door. So, for instance, you know, you might be a journalist, you know, for a couple of years, but then, you know, your newspaper or your media house, you know, retrenches you. Then you go into PR, you go into communications, you might go into kind of events companies, etc. Then you come back into journalism because journalism picks up a bit, or you're lucky and you find a particular job. And, you know, there is a sense sometimes that, you know, so you've been in the PR world for a while, you know, and so obviously your job is quite different. Your job is to put across like a good perspective, you know, not to ask the hard questions, not to be as critical as obviously you need to be, have to be as a journalist. So does that mean that you now not playing that journalist role? You know, so some of these, you know, things, but I don't think that the situation is going to change. And so, you know, you could say, well, obviously, you know, the solution is that, you know, if you've done PR work, then you shouldn't come back into journalism. Mm-hmm. But that's not the solution. So I think, you know, these are some of the things that SANET, the South African National Editors Forum, has been looking at in terms of their ethics report. And, you know, so the possible solution there is, you know, you just have to be transparent. You know, so when, you know, you're talking about a particular journalist, you do have to talk about their background. You know, this particular person was the spokesperson for this minister, then was with, you know, a particular media house, then, you know, worked for, you know, this huge corporate, mm-hmm. and now was back in the media again. And I think, you know, just given where we're at, that is probably one of you know, several ways forward. But saying that you can't move between these two, you know, these different professions and occupations, it doesn't work.
No.
It doesn't work.
So that raises the questions about concerns of credibility. I mean, we've had a number of events that have eroded the credibility of newsrooms, of media practitioners and media houses, the SABC's corruption and financial woes, independent media's published accusations against journalists, editors, rival publications. There was also the discreditation of Sunday Times' investigative articles around SARS Rogue Unit, the Cato Man and death squads, you name it. So we've had a period where there's been some discrediting of either media houses or of journalism, but overall of the industry and of the practice. What can newsrooms do to claw back perceived losses, perceived or not perceived losses of credibility?
So I think that, you know, that was one of the big reasons why SANET decided to actually launch, you know, this inquiry, this independent inquiry into ethics issues. You know, and there are a whole lot of resolutions that they put out. So, for instance, they put out 69 recommendations. Well, in fact, a judge and two panelists, you know, worked on this and put together 69 recommendations around how do we improve the ethics of the media. Mm-hmm. And there are a whole lot of different areas. So for instance, there's a lot there are a lot of recommendations around the financial sustainability of the media, saying, you know, some of the reasons why, you know, different publications and different media houses get things wrong is just that, you know, the financial issues of the media, the fact that you've got so few journalists working 24-hour news cycles on multiple platforms, you're going to have a problem. I mean, people are human and they're going to make errors. Mm. And we need to look at those, you know, thin on the ground, you know, few journalists in the newsroom. So they look at that. But then there's also interesting ones where they look at the regulatory bodies. So they look at the Press Council, which looks at print media and online media. And then the BCCSA, the Broadcasting Complaints mm-hmm. Commission of South Africa. And they say, well, how can you make sure that these regulatory bodies of the media actually work more effectively? Because those are the bodies that are supposed to hold the media to account. So if you're unhappy with an article, if you feel that an article or a news broadcast was incorrect, the facts are incorrect, someone's been maligned or defamed, you know, you have to make sure that those regulatory bodies really function effectively. And, of course, are accessible. You know, you can't have them, for instance, you know, the press code only being there in English or mm-hmm. Afrikaans. I mean, you know, we have 11 official languages in this country, and it's absolutely unfair not to make sure that those press codes are available in all the different languages. So I think what's quite interesting in terms of that ethics report and its recommendations is it talks about a whole lot of ways that, you know, the Press Council could be more accessible, you know, the BCCSA could be more accessible. So this, and also interestingly, you know, it looks at education and training of journalists. Like how can that be improved? How can the ethics courses be improved? So I think it is interesting, and it does show that the media is concerned about ethics issues and actually having a real pause moment around it to sort of say, well, we need to come up with basically an action plan, a 5-year action plan around ethics issues.
Yes, yes. There's so much to be said, especially around upskilling, because this is an era where everybody, not just media workers, need to be upskilled, but upskilling as just a demand of the job at the moment. But when you also look at when you have the downsizing of newsrooms, and often you don't have the senior reporters there anymore, providing that mentorship and opportunities to upskill to more junior workers, there is a loss. There's a loss of there's a loss of an opportunity to maintain quality.
Yeah, and I think that that's actually one of the things that's very interesting about the report, is it talks about that mentorship thing. It's like the issue of, like, a lot of senior journalists have actually lost their jobs. They were very expensive, and so when media houses were cutting back, those were the journalists that lost their jobs because their salary bill was high. But then, of course, that mentorship isn't there, and then you've got a lot of amazing new young journalists coming in. But the thing is that you're never going to immediately know all the answers, and journalism is about ethical issues all the time. Should we cover the story? Should we not cover it? How should we cover it? What angle should we take? How do we get to the bottom of this issue? How do we access all those facts? That's something. You might be one of the most brilliant young journalists in the world, but you are not going to, you're going to have a difficult time, if you don't have a senior person, showing you the ropes. So you're quite right. It's very important that we look at those kind of mentorship issues, but also, on the job skills training. And I think, one of the things that was interesting about media houses in the past is that they used to have a lot of training that would happen, in the media house, so on the job training. And a lot of that has now shifted, and less of that is happening. So I think what we're needing to do, so again, looking at solutions, pooling training across different media organizations and media houses is important. Also, just in terms of the issue of, journalists have to cover so many areas, and some of them are very specialist. So linking journalists to particular academic institutions, think tanks, sources of, for instance, if you're talking about the coronavirus, the latest information and statistics on vaccines, the coronavirus, how it's developing, variants, etc. That's important. And one of the things that I do think that has been very positive is the growth of, some specialist media houses. So for instance, specialist, media institutions that, for instance, are directly dealing with health journalism. Yeah. And that's quite exciting. And the fact that they are linking up to other media houses, creating those kind of partnerships. And that, I think, is quite helpful.
Yes, it seems like there's
some of the things.
Yes, in some areas there's the areas of improvement, and there's been some loss. We don't have the kind of specialist journalism that we used to have, but in other areas like investigative journalism, we seem to have a deepening in South Africa, and of course those specialist media houses that we see emerging. Kate Skinner, thank you so much for your reflections on the state of the newsroom. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. That's media researcher Kate Skinner.